Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Crystal Palace and Brighton, because nothing unites fans like mutual confusion over why they hate each other.
This week at Palace, two games played, 16 shots, an XG coming out of our ears, yet two losses, and a long list of attacking regrets. We discuss the games against Strasbourg and Man United, plus discuss Glasner's thoughts on why the dip in form.
This week at Brighton, another 3 points and a really good performance. So has Hertzler found his best 11?
This is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
Neil. All right.
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Sorry, I'm laughing already because I could just see your face. It's like you walked in the studio as if someone had killed your dog or something.
Luckily, I don't have a dog. And it's not because it's dead. This is the first time in 33 episodes of this podcast that I didn't want to come over next door. I didn't want to turn up and knock at your door.
The times, they are a-changing.
Maybe.
Listen, first of all, before we get any further, I think it's important just to say to everyone, there are games midweek. So when you're listening to this podcast, we're not going to do the previews of next game and all that sort of stuff because it just won't work out, the timings of everything.
Look at you joining in the midweek club this week.
Well, you know what I mean.
Been doing that for a while, Neil.
Yeah, I know. It's nice to be included. So we've got Premier League games in the middle of the week and we've obviously got the weekend games. So we'll talk about them a little bit, but generally speaking, we're not going to do a preview. This is really just about looking back at the last games for both Palace and Brighton.
And you've had a busy weekend, haven't you, Neil? I got invited to Neil's birthday party at a surprise party.
It was all a bit of a shock. Yeah, I know. It was even more of a surprise because it's about 3 weeks early. I think that's how they caught me out. So that was a very nice evening, wasn't it?
Mate, it was lovely. And more so for me to be able to meet some of your family.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Which is one of them things, isn't it? When you meet people's family, you get all the goss. What I've decided to do is drip feed as much gossip about you into the next 10 podcasts.
Well, I think we haven't got much time for that, Andy. If we could just move on, that'd be great.
Yeah, but no, look, jokes aside, it was lovely to meet our Spanish correspondent who flew over for your party.
He did. He surprised me, so that was very nice.
And lots of other people as well. But yes, happy birthday for 3 weeks' time.
Thank you, mate. Much appreciated. Right, where are we going to start?
Well, I mean, probably...
Should we start your misery early?
Yeah, go on. Let's talk about the Man United game.
Okay, so as time of recording, it was yesterday, Sunday, the Crystal Palace v Manchester United game. Remind me, what was the score again, Andy?
2-1.
2-1 to...
I will leave it there, because I got the score right, actually, just the wrong way around. 2-1 to Man United. Look, it was our chance to make up for the loss midweek to Strasbourg. Mm. Kill the myth that we can't win a Premier League game after European midweeker.
Yep.
And the most important carrot that was dangled was fourth place if we can get a result.
Wasn't it?
Pile on the misery to Man United sat in the bottom half of the table.
Yeah, how did it go?
It didn't go very well, mate. Didn't go very well indeed. Yeah. I mean, talking about lineups, I mean, Wharton, Richards and Kamada returned to the starting 11 after kind of being swapped out midweek. Mm. I think, look, yeah, just to summarise, I'd say, you know, I mean, look, I sound like you now, mate. You always start this off by going... And it was most definitely a game of two halves.
Actually, this game was.
It really was.
It really was, yeah.
It really was. So I think the first half, we did all right. We did very well, in fact. Mm. Second half, less so. And we'll talk about why. Saying that, though, we didn't get off to the best start. Did you see that goal scramble at the start?
Yes, that very first few minutes, yeah.
Yeah, so I was struggling to get up there in time because it was an early kickoff and I'd forgotten it was an early kickoff. So I kind of, bearing in mind that I was out with you in a pub the night before or whatever, it was a bit of an effort to kind of get all that sorted. But I got up there and just about managed to see the goal scramble as I walked down the steps and I was like, oh, for God's sake. Henderson managed to somehow get his hands on it. And I think, look, after that initial blip, as it were, I think we got a really good hold on the game and looked really good. Creating chances, I think Wharton and Mateta looked really good in midfield and had the good early chances. Mm. There was that good volley by Walton, unfortunately straight at the keeper. Mm. And then Mateta had his what would now be known as a repetitive one-on-one situation in which he did what he does in most situations these days, where he goes one-on-one and then goes wide.
It's funny how, like, you've been talking about it for weeks, but recently it's become even more evident to someone who's not a constant watcher of Palace. That,
you know why, didn't you?
Why is that?
Because we're losing games now.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. They're becoming more important, aren't yeah. they? Yeah, yeah, you're right. And, he does. He gets himself in these fantastic positions. And then, yeah, just can't quite put it away. I mean, don't get me wrong. Obviously, he's a good striker. But those opportunities may start to dwindle as you go through the season.
But again, you look at Mateta's first half and you take everything apart from the goals. Like, I'm bearing in mind he did score. Well, he scored two, but only one of them counted. Mm. But I think if you take his goals out of the game, he actually had a really good game again. Held up play great. Yeah. Interceptions great. Forward passes brilliant. Touched in the opposition box. Just Palace can't hit a barn door at the moment, and that's the frustration of it all. But deja vu aside, I think we were genuinely running the midfield against Man United, and with so much energy, mate. I mean, look, in that period, I think Kamada forced a decent save from Lammens. Pino, kind of, there was this last ditch kind of slide in from Euro, yes. which was, again, all really, really good chances. And if you imagine, you're sat there as a Palace fan, and you're like, one of these has got to go in. Yeah. At some point, one of these has got to go in. We could have been 3 or 4 up probably inside half an hour. That's the situation.
It's going to sound very similar to my discussion about the Brighton game, but go on.
Mate, so many chances. Then came the breakthrough. Walton played Mateta in, and obviously the defender caught his back foot. Very rarely these days do you ever see a defender bring down an attacker in the box and not even appeal it.
Yeah.
There was no getting out of that.
No, absolutely. And I think that was the thing. It was just resignation on his face, wasn't there? You could see it. I mean, no one was going to argue that one.
And I mean, I don't think he meant to do it.
No. It's just awkward, wasn't
just
it?
He's what it was. So he brought him down in the box. And here came one of the big talking points of the game. After scoring the penalty, he's obviously sent the keeper the wrong way. The goal was then disallowed. Did you see all this?
I did, yes. I mean, he's a lucky boy in some respects because the rule only changed this season.
Correct.
So if that had been last season, it would have been ruled out and it would have been a free kick, I think, to Man United.
Yeah, that's pretty much what would have happened. But obviously he did get a chance to retake it and then cool as a cucumber, actually, just went in the other bottom corner. Because then your mind starts playing games with you then, don't you? You're like, hang on a minute, he's going to think I'm going to do the same thing again, or am I?
And also recently he's had that little bit of a dodgy moment in the Conference League when he took that penalty and he rushed it and missed it and things. So I think there's those little things that play on your mind.
There is, but also, let's just remember, Mateta is Mateta, even though I was throwing a bit of shade earlier. Do you know what his record is in the Premier League for penalties?
Oh, actually, I don't know.
7 out of 7.
Oh, is it?
Technically 8 out of 8. Well. but yeah, 7 out of 7. And that ain't bad.
Yeah, that's not bad, to be
right?
fair.
So obviously he missed the one for us in the Conference League, as you referred to, but I think that we can give him that one. Obviously, you know what? Do you know, obviously, why that rule change happened, do you? Obviously, it was all down to Alvarez's penalty in the Champions League.
I remember it.
Do you remember?
It was a big deal, wasn't it? Right at the last minute of the game.
Against Real Madrid.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously, Beth Mead was the first one to benefit from that rule. Do you know when that was?
No, I don't.
Mate, big moment. The Euro 2025 penalty shootout final.
Of course.
Final.
Yes.
That's the first time that rule was ever used.
Was it?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
That's interesting.
And obviously, Mateta is now the first one to benefit from that rule in the Premier League. Nice that Palace have got a first for a good reason for a change.
And I think that's a sensible ruling as well. I think that's a sensible rule change because no one attempts to do that. No one tries to do it. It's just an accident.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fair... I think that's a fair thing. The other way round of just losing the opportunity to take a penalty kick, I don't think was ever fair.
I think it's a complicated rule though, because the more I looked into it, because I'll be honest with you, I sat in the stands and I was like, what is happening here? I had no idea about that rule. But obviously the rule only comes into play if the player scores.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And obviously, if they don't, then it's an indirect free kick. Or obviously, if it's as part of a penalty shootout, then it would count as a miss. So, yeah, interesting times. Just interesting to mention about also, I know it's not Sal Grace, by the way, because I'm not saying we would have won if it hadn't happened. I accept defeat. I do accept defeat.
We'll
but
see.
Interesting. Do you remember that whole situation where Gay stood in the wall and the whole kind of,
oh, yeah,
they found a rule? that's happened to us in the last two games now. If you have a look at the images of the free kicks that we've conceded, because we've conceded from three set pieces out of the last four goals, right?
Okay.
That seems to be our weakness at the moment. Two of them should technically have been ruled under the rule that we got done for when we're within a metre of the wall and all that. So it's an interesting one because there's so many rules these days. I just don't think they're being evenly dished out across the...
Sounding a little sour there.
No, not at all, because I've already said we wouldn't have won anyway. I think saying that, though, it'd be lovely if these rules were dished out evenly.
Oh, mate, consistency.
That's all we ask,
absolutely.
Right? You take it on the good and the bad. On this one, we had a good.
Right, come on, let's get to it.
Right. Oh, Sarr. We talk about Sarr. He got replaced by Nketiah, right?
Yes.
Sarr is currently on crutches.
Yeah, he didn't look well. It was his ankle, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, he basically he got taken out by Luke Shaw quite vigorously, actually. Wasn't even given as a free kick or anything. I think he got the ball, but he took him out.
It was a heavy challenge.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I'm not saying it was an unfair one.
No, I agree.
Just didn't. And obviously, Sarr was then, it was one of those situations, Sarr kind of galloping midair and then landed on his foot whilst it wasn't flat. He managed to carry on for 30 minutes, though, after that, because that only happened in the fourth or fifth minute.
And I think that's a good sign, Andy. I think that means, I mean, we don't know, obviously, at time of recording, we don't know how bad it's going to be, but, and I appreciate there are midweek games. I'm probably not expecting him to see him in midweek. But,
no way.
But it's a good sign that he carried on. It means it wasn't that bad, and hopefully he just needs a bit of a rest, as all your players do.
I disagree, mate. I think that we ain't going to see him till Feb.
Ooh, well, fingers crossed.
Because he's going to the AFCON. And so we've only got a couple of games before that all starts.
Right.
I'd be surprised if he gets a game now before he's got a swollen ankle and he's on crutches.
Time will tell.
Let's see. Yeah, a couple of other clear-cut chances. There was a slip-up by the Man United defence, and Nketiah, who had only just come on, bearing in mind Nketiah was playing in Sarr's position now, he picked up that loose ball, seemingly... Again, here we go, deja vu, through on goal, right? Everyone running behind him and the keeper, basically, is all he had. And then for some unknown reason, Nketiah decided he didn't want to hit it on his left foot. He wanted to hit it on his right foot. So he cut in. And when he cut in, Luke Shaw then slides in and blocks him. So he lost his advice. It was a very, very silly decision, really, from Nketiah. But I guess panic is what happens when you're through on goal, isn't it? And anything can go on. And as the first half whistle blew, although in front, I did get that feeling. And I hate to kind of call it and go, I knew what was going to happen. But I just got that feeling, just like I did with a couple of the other games that we've had this season, where you go, them six or seven chances that we should have scored, they're going to come back to haunt us, because Man United can't play that badly in the second half.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree. And I think the other thing that came into play, obviously, later, but it's something you always have to consider as well, is the fact that they had a whole week to prepare. So they're going to be fitter when it comes to the second half as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, we went toe-to-toe with them. We played twice as many games as them this season.
Yeah.
So I think so far so good. But also the fact that our only goal came from a spot kick, this is what concerns me. Scoring goals from open play is a bit of a concern. And most of them are coming from our defenders at the moment, which says something.
But half time, you're in a lead and you're not necessarily bad at defending a lead, let's be honest.
Not normally.
No.
Not normally, but midweek lost my assurance on that, which we'll talk about later. Look, we were controlling the midfield. We were creating chances in the second half. I think they had an early chance, but not really. Let's be honest. Man United had one split of a chance in that whole game in open play.
Yeah, I suppose that's fair.
They scored their two goals through set pieces. So they only really had one proper chance in open play. And I think that's the thing that is hard to take on this one. But anyway, look, they got a free kick against the run of play. Zirky deep in the area. Did you see this goal?
I have no idea how he scored that goal. Honestly, I watched the replay now about 8 times and I still can't work out. There is no way he knew where he was kicking the ball. He just kicked it and it got lucky that it was literally right in the place where no one could reach for some weird reason. It was just bizarre.
Mate, I'm glad you said that because it would have sounded like Sal Grapes.
No, I'm with you with this one.
I can't for 1 second believe anyone would be at that angle and think they're going to be able to score.
Look, if that was Haaland, I'd go, oh, he meant that. Right, this is Zerky. He hasn't scored for like 17 years. So for him to put that in the back of the net, you can't tell me he meant that. He just punted it at goal and it just worked out that it was exactly where your goalkeeper wasn't. I mean, it sort of went under Henderson's arm and above his leg. You know, that sort of mid-drift area where you just can't quite... It was very
and
unlucky.
You just wouldn't expect mate, honestly, and I think the whole stadium... Just went quiet with like, what?
Well, not
what?
The whole stadium. I mean, you know, Man United went mental and there's usually quite a few travelling Man United fans in the home end as well.
Well,
isn't there?
So. Talking about the Man United fans, here's my observation of the Man United fans that game on Sunday, that they were the loudest away fans that I have seen at Palace in a long time.
They were probably just really pleased they didn't have to go on the motorway to get to a game.
Well, you know? Yeah. But also, they were also the quietest away fans I've ever seen. As in loud when before they went behind.
When it's all working
and then
in their favour.
When they were 1-0 down, yeah. I didn't hear a peep out of them, honestly. And then it was just something else. They were so loud, mate. So loud. Anyway, Mateta had another good chance on the hour mark, right at the defence. What did he do? Curled it just wide.
Just wide.
This is the problem with Mateta, right? It's very rarely does he hit it at the keeper. He'll always go for the bottom corners, and obviously it didn't quite work out. Mm. And then as Palace tired, Man U grew in confidence. What we all thought might happen after that Thursday night disgrace. Yeah. Another set piece would be the nail in the coffin. Fernandez took the free kick, played in Mason Mount, and Mason Mount did what he doesn't do often. Basically scored. And I think, truthfully, if you looked at this, the camera behind the goal showed it perfectly. Henderson was trying to arrange the wall. Whilst he was doing that, the referee blew his whistle, and we had what would only be deemed as half a wall and kind of the other half with a couple of Man United players in the middle of it. It just didn't... There was a wall that was not in front of the goal.
Well, no, I think that's a little bit over the top. I would say that they should have had time to get themselves in order. They did sort of get in order, but because Bruno Fernandes took it short, obviously the wall then broke up because the ball was in play, as it were. He just passed it to Mason Mount. And I think that was probably one of the biggest issues, that the wall then didn't stay intact as such. Pino in particular, I noticed, like, just took about 2-yard big step to his left, and also, you know, went side on, made himself even thinner, all those sorts of things that happened. Yeah. It was just really not good play from that perspective. From a team that generally, Palace, and I'm being fair here, generally are really good defensively, That situation was really poor.
Mate, last season, I think we were the best, if not in the top three, for defending set pieces. Yeah. This year, 3 of our last 4 goals have been from set pieces that we've conceded. It was a bit of a shambles. And look, Henderson was livid. Absolutely livid about the whole situation. So that was 2 set pieces they've outdone us by. And then I think, look, our first real chance from the second half was a header from Nketiah that landed just wide. Mm. Mate, look, we just looked tired. And for a good 20 minutes, no exaggeration, I don't believe we won a single header or a single second ball for that 20-minute period. It was tricky. It was very, very tricky. Glasner made 3 subs, and I think he made them and gave him a good sort of 15, 20 minutes as opposed to the 5 or 6 that he normally gives them because he could see that. He brought Uche on for Pino.
Yeah.
And Uche, who I've been sticking up for as like, give him a chance. Yeah. Understand why Glasner hasn't been giving him a chance. He was shocking.
Oh, I think that's unfair, Andy.
He was.
Yeah, he was shocking, but that's because you've not given him a chance. You can't then expect him in the 12 minutes that he had, plus injury time.
Yeah,
he came on the 78th minute.
Was it 78?
Right? Yeah,
okay.
And then obviously injury time as well. Let's say 20 minutes to be fair to him. He's not going to suddenly work out how to play with all his teammates and do everything perfectly when he hasn't been playing proper football. You've got to give him 10, 10 games. You've got to give him, you know, 10 appearances. You know, you've got to give him some time to get into it.
Get it. I think I was expecting the basics, like, you know, pass completion and stuff like that, which just wasn't happening.
Might help.
And I think that's the issue. I wasn't, would never question his work rate or anything like
that. No, but what my point is that, you know, you can't expect, this is Glasdon's fault in some respects. You can't expect suddenly a guy who hasn't played all season to get come it. On and make the difference. You've got to give him time. So it's, I think it's a little bit unfair to expect too much from him. I would say that's Glasner's fault for not giving him enough minutes in previous games.
Mate, I don't disagree, but I think the facts were that he didn't do what he was meant to have done.
Absolutely.
And I think his average ratings on BBC and Sky and stuff are struggling to get out of the fours for every game that he has come on. Mm. But there we go. Let's see. Lerma came on for Kamada and Deveni came on for Mitchell, all of which failed to really have an impact. Mm. I think is the truth of the matter. Yeah. I think it was too little too late. Do you know what my one gripe is out of all of this?
Just one.
Well, I think he made three substitutions, which is unheard of, right? In terms of in quite short succession. We don't normally do that. But we're not normally losing, right? Mm. That's the truth of the matter. And I think that the one substitution that would have affected the game didn't happen. Which,
who's that?
SA. You look at the type of player that you need in that moment.
Yeah.
And there was someone on that bench, although isn't in his good books and hasn't had loads of game time, SA could have had an impact in that game.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because like we've been talking for so long, obviously, about, you know, Glasner, the squad numbers, all those sorts of things. And obviously we'll get to the other stuff that he talked about after the game in a minute. But that concept of only liking certain players as well. So I think, you know, although he can talk about his squad size, there are players on his bench, there are players in the squad that he's just not playing.
Well, no, this is the point. And I think this is the point. He can cry foul, but there is a decent option there that he could have bought on in terms of an attacking option that could have created chances. We've seen him do it at Millwall, we know he's a good player. And I know he hasn't done it in the Premier League.
But yet, also, but like, why not? Like, why not try it?
Well, that's the point.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like, can't have done anything worse than Uche did. That's the issue. But anyway, look, spark and flair from SA is desperately needed. And I just hope and pray that he comes out and just, if he gets an opportunity, does prove his doubt was wrong, because we need him now. Anyway, Man United continues to put the pressure on, which resulted to us defending deep, which was incredibly frustrating to watch, Neil. We struggled to push the ball upfield, very frustrating. And I think that when you're 2-1 down at home, you haven't lost a game since February, right? And your Premier League unbeaten home form is at risk, and it's Man United, fourth place. All you ask is that someone gets that ball in the other half and has a go.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't do it. And of course, the worse we got, the better Man United got. Trust them to find their form at our gaff. Anyway, late kick from Deveni, I think for me, summed up the game. Straight at a brick wall.
It was, wasn't it? It was terrible.
Straight at a brick wall. I mean, it wouldn't have been if there was a gap in the wall. Maybe that's what he was looking at. I don't know. But look, yeah, straight in a brick wall. And that's how I felt, which was that there was just a brick wall that we couldn't get through. And it, you know, truthfully, we all say this, like, footballers are humans. You're not meant to win every game, because otherwise it wouldn't be interesting and there wouldn't be a league. And truthfully, it weren't our day, mate.
No.
It just wasn't our day. Something didn't click. So there we go. I think first half, as I said, Palace were great. Second half, outclassed by United is the truth, because we were tired. First half, do you know what United's XG was?
United's XG.
Excluding their set pieces.
Oh, not much.
0.01. That's a fact.
Okay.
You take out the set pieces, 0.01. So that's my point, which is that in every game we've lost this year, every game we've lost, and there's not been many, our XG and our opportunities to have put that game to bed by half time were always there. So therefore, we haven't lost a game where we've gone, fair play, they were better than us.
Every
game we've lost, you've gone, oh, not again. How many chances? And that's the frustrating thing about it. It's almost a little bit of a victim of our own success situation.
Because I get it.
As a Palace fan, I'm used to losing games because we were crap. But actually, we weren't crap in any of these games. We were tired in the second half, but we still put in enough to win it. Anyway, look, we talked about Sarr and how the fact that he ain't going to come back. And I think that's the bit that worries me now. It's the depth in the squad.
Obviously.
We've now lost Sarr.
Yeah.
I think as I said earlier, AFCON starts 23rd of December. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's that? 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Two and a half weeks from now?
Well, yeah, because he'll have to go before it starts as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, he plays for Senegal and they're a decent team.
They are indeed.
Bearing in mind, he could be gone, let's say early Feb, late Jan, early Feb.
Yeah, yeah. There's a good chance that he won't be back until February.
Yeah. So let's see what happens. What was interesting...
Are we going to get to it now? Can we talk about it?
Yeah. By the way, leaves us ninth in the table, Neil. I'm sure you probably realise.
Absolutely, yeah. Come on, let's talk about it. Come on. Do you want me to read them out, the quotes?
Yeah, if you want.
Okay, so Glasner.
Can I just say to the listeners that Neil, like a little child on Christmas Day, was excitingly texting me going, Glasner's got some brilliant quotes. I think he's definitely high. I'm like, yes, Neil, fully aware. Fully aware of it all.
Glasner's joined the Seagull side of this podcast. He really has. So,
you wish.
Glasner quotes, if you play European football for the first time in your history, you should invest and not save.
If I'm going to let you read these out, can you not read them out like a dick? Can you actually read it properly?
I think, he said, January is too late to add more people to the squad. We will have played more than 50% of our games. And then he said, everything was pretty clear and I didn't say anything, but today I think it is also time to speak about it, that we missed the chance to play even better this season in the summer.
Can I just say that the bloke from Austria delivered that much better than you did.
Can I give you one last quote? Just one last little quote from him.
I mean,
as well.
Mate, there's plenty of them because he said the whole thing four different times.
Just one more that I really enjoyed. We are still in very good positions, but the chance to play an even better season, well, we threw it away in the summer. Oh.
To be fair, there were some worse quotes than that, mate.
Yeah, there were some really bad ones. I was trying to be a little bit kind. Obviously, his English isn't his first language and he was using very direct language to try and get his point across. I'm sure if he was speaking in Austrian, he might have come up with a better way of saying it. But ultimately, we all know where this conversation was going and it was about time he said something and he's probably chosen the right time in some respects to do it before the January window, when you lose a game. And obviously, the players are absolutely knackered. But ultimately, what's your opinion, Andy, on all of this?
Well, we don't need to ask you what your opinion is, do we?
Well, we're going to, because we're going to talk about it. What's your opinion, though?
I'm disappointed in Glasner.
Are you?
I'm disappointed that this is what he's done. Because this is a manager that holds himself and his players in, you know, high regard.
That's true.
And he sets really high standards.
Yep.
And if one of his players had spoken out against him, what do you think would happen?
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you, mate. Yeah.
And the fact that he's like, he had the look of a disappointed child who didn't get their own way in them news conferences. And he was clearly annoyed, right? And livid about how that game had played out. And he was frustrated. He was kicking water bottles. Mm. We saw a different side to Glasner on Sunday. To clarify, I don't disagree with anything that he said.
It's difficult not to, isn't it?
You listen to this podcast because you're on it, right? Was it 2 weeks ago I did my swooping statement?
Yep, you did,
right?
Andy. Yep.
And I pretty much said everything.
Yep.
And I mean, look, mate, because there was so many more bits to this statement saying about how, you know, like playing Arsenal in the EFL Cup, not an important game for everybody, nothing to win. But this is not my attitude. I want to complete in every single game. We need the resources to do it. I don't want progress. He was basically saying about how we play, by the time the January transfer window opens, we would have played 65% of our games that season. Yeah. What's the point? And I think this is everything I was saying a couple of weeks ago, because I could see that we were one injury away from, you know, potential breaking point. Mm. I think everything's got to be put into perspective. The the media just picked up on this, and of course they're running with it. But let's just not underestimate the fact that any manager who's just lost their first game at home in 15 games or whatever it is, and two games in 3 days, when we're not used to losing, that man is a winner for a reason, because he's a bad loser.
Okay,
right?
Look. Let me ask a slightly different question then. Okay, so rather than what he said, why do you think he said it now?
Because truthfully, I don't because think he's going to sign a new contract, mate.
Right. Okay. Okay. So what? Again, what do you think the purpose of saying it right now is? Is it because he wants to get his point across so that if Palace lose in certain games in the near future, he can say, well, look, I told everyone? Or do you think it's he wants a way out now?
No, I think it's... And I hate saying this, but I think truthfully, it's a little bit of self-preservation.
Right.
I think it's like, I'm not a bad manager.
It's the Antonio Conte.
And that's why I'm so disappointed in him, because what he said is... I mean, mate, listen, the way that he's dealt with this up until this point... Everyone in the world knew very well all of this stuff.
See, right?
Everyone knew all of this had happened.
Yeah, no, I
everyone knows that he said, if Gaye's going, I'm probably going to go, and all this. But from an outward-facing point of view, he was professional and he didn't say it and all the other things. What he's done now is he's, in essence, got... I mean, look, Steve Parrish and Blitzer and all the others are going to be like... Brilliant. And I think the issue is that I'm having a look on the internet at the moment. There's lots of early rumours about January transfers, apparently, sure. Pre-arrangements in place, things like that. And it looked like what I'm seeing looks good.
Right.
We'll go into it maybe in a couple of weeks. But I think that there's early conversations that are clearly happening about players coming in, all the other bits and pieces. But you've got to remember there's two sides to this, right? You've got... Every Palace fan wants to keep hold of Glasner. Most successful period in our history. Two trophies, highest in the league we've been forever. Like all of that sort of stuff, right? But no one manager is ever bigger than a club.
I totally agree with you.
And I don't think that... Like, here's the situation, right? You sometimes have to kind of re-engineer it a little bit to put it into perspective. I do not want Glasner to go. I love Glasner. I love the football that I'm watching. Even when I'm losing, I'm entertained, all that sort of stuff. However, are you telling me that even if Glasner signs a new contract, that he's going to be there forever? Of course he's not, right? So that club have to plan for the future. And at the moment, that same guy that's just, I mean, he has literally thrown his dummy out the pram, right? That same guy that's just done that still hasn't signed his contract. So therefore, actually, he's not helping the situation himself, is he? Because he's not saying to the club, if you buy all these players, like I'm here and I'm here for the project, Palace could spend £50 million in January on Glasner players and Glasner not be there to manage them. So I think there's not a full picture here in that whole situation.
It's very strange. It is very strange. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, that it's about preservation and about maybe what he wants. He may already know, quite rightly, he should, what is going on for the January transfer window. You know, they would have had conversations. They know what they're planning to do. And maybe he's just thinking, you know what? Nah, not for me this anymore. I'm going to see out my contract and I'm going to see where we get to by the end of the season, but probably I'm done, you know? And it's really interesting to see the quotes come out at this moment in time, I think, for me. You know, it's strange.
No, but I think you've overdone it there.
Go on.
You've overdone it there, because you've got to remember this is in the heat of the moment, right? This is when the media are going, why did you lose? Why did you lose two games? Why have you not got any players? And I think the...
You say it's a heat in the moment, Andy. He did three separate interviews, one after the other. He did one to the camera. He did some to the reporters in the press room. He did another one to another TV report. And he said the same thing over and over again.
No, he did. No,
so that's not heat of the moment, is it?
Yeah,
that's calm and collected in the sense of he knew what he wanted to say, get his message across. He didn't change his mind by the time he got to the press conference.
No, I'm with you on that. But what I'm saying is, it's situational. That's things just happened to him. Once you've said it once, you might as well say it three times. Is the truth of the matter, right? That is the reality. No, you can't retract anything.
So what's social media saying? What's the other Palace fans saying generally? What's your take on what people are talking about in the sense of those quotes? So how are they feeling?
I don't. This is the thing, you see. I don't think that. I think from everyone that's not a Palace fan, and certainly for Brighton fans, it's big news. This, right? Because the manager's got the ump. Do you know that nice Austrian
bloke, what Palace
who doesn't say much, has got the ump. The Palace fans are saying, "We know." Yeah. Right? What's new about this? Yeah, like, yeah. Look at me, right? I know I do a podcast and everything, but I don't think I'm the most knowledgeable ever Palace fan. I'm just an ordinary guy who is like enjoying football and liking our rise at the moment.
Yeah.
But I know that there's peaks and troughs, and I understand that guy is probably, and I say this with the greatest respect, I think he genuinely is one of the best managers out there at the moment that there is. I don't think there's a single club that wouldn't consider him on our shortlist if they were to come up. I think, look, he's on the Liverpool shortlist at the moment.
I was going to say, I wonder if he'll turn up at Anfield before the end of the season.
He's on the shortlist, apparently. Mm. So I think this is what I'm trying to say. I think he's getting his head turned at every occasion. He's lost two games and he's got the ump. But what it doesn't mean is that he's definitely going. What it does mean is that he's saying, this is why we're losing.
Yeah.
It's not because I'm a bad manager, but then don't forget, you've got players on that bench who aren't being played. So it's not as clear cut as it all
sounds. Totally agree. It's been a very strange situation. Yeah.
Spanish international came in.
You did sign five players, but I think Match of the Day showed the stat, didn't they? Where we talked about this at the beginning of the season, you know, the spend and save piece, which is in his quotes, obviously.
I think we're 16 million, I think, we saved.
We're pretty much like...
I think if you have a look at the... we'll wrap this up now, I know. Sorry, Brighton fans. I'm sure you're probably enjoying my demise. But yeah, I think if you look at the financial fair play situation and the fact that we've got owners that are, you know, can substantially invest. And that's without even looking into this new guy that we've got, Woody Johnson. But I think 16 million. And then I think if you take the last 3 or 4 years, we are well in the green. We could undoubtedly spend the best part of 80 million, if not more, in January and still be well within our limits without even having to sell anybody. So I think that's the point that Glasner's trying to make, which is, why didn't you do it? And I think we didn't do it because we had no one in recruitment, because we didn't quite know what
we
doing,
know all
and
this,
we were too
mate.
Busy with all the other stuff. That's why.
I get you.
That's the truth.
And it will be interesting to see the next press conference from Glasner, I suppose, and see where he sits, because he's inevitably going to get asked again and see what his position is then. In once he's calmed down and he's actually a bit calmer, it'll be interesting to see what he says.
Well, you know what every reporter's going to be trying to be doing around the Croydon area and London area now, don't you? Hunting down Steve Parish.
Absolutely.
Because Steve Parish ain't shy for a camera.
No, no.
And that's the interview I'm interested in, because I guarantee you Steve Parish will go, there's no problem here.
All right, see you in a mo.
Oh, yeah! AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Did you enjoy that, Neil?
I did a little bit.
You haven't seen me annoyed in this podcast. And that just shows
The UEFA bit got you a bit annoyed, didn't it? In the summertime, but actually in the season, you've got to give me my moment. I'm enjoying this a little bit.
Do you know what? I said to my family before I came over, I was like, you take the rough with the smooth. And
you do.
To do a Palace podcast with a Brighton fan and kind of not get the wrath for this long period of time, I've been very, very lucky.
You have. Because
every week I've rocked in and gone, what's wrong with Brighton, Neil?
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, everybody listening, fair play to you. I'm getting my just desserts today, but it won't last for long, I'm sure. Neil, let's hear how well Brighton did against my favourite club.
Yeah.
The one good thing about this is that you beat Forest.
Do you know what? In all seriousness, that did cross my mind yesterday when it happened. I was thinking, I wonder if Andy's happy or annoyed. I wonder.
Truthfully, I was the nail in the coffin at the end of the day was when that, because I was listening to it on the way home. And yeah, I thought, do you know what? Obviously, the fact that you've leapfrogged us now in the league, that's the bit of it that really annoyed me, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah. Nottingham Forest 0, Brighton and Hove Albion 2.
So obviously you were out for a little bit of revenge on this game, right?
We were very much.
Can you just remind me, just to cheer me up a little bit,
I don't think we need to
what the score was last time you played?
It was more than 3-0.
Seven,
so it was. It was a ridiculous game last time. And hopefully this will finally just put that nail in the coffin and just we can move on from it. You know what I mean? Because that was all the TV pundits wanted to talk about over the last 3 days of this game. It's like, oh, let's talk about the 7-0. It's like, I get it, but it's like, it's done now. Let's move on, you know?
Okay.
Do you know what, Andy? Just in summary, just to start, one line about this game. I think that was our best overall full 90 minutes of the season so far.
I can't disagree with... Oh,
thank God for
this
that.
Podcast is yeah, going these days.
I just think it was a really good, mature, away performance, you know? Look, I'll get into all the details, but I just wanted to say that because I've moaned a lot over the last few weeks.
Yeah, you
and And, you know, I might be moaning again. We never know in the future. But what I would say about this game is that from minute one to minute 95, whatever it was, I felt generally that it was just a really good performance. Very different types of performance through the game, different things that were needed. But overall, it was the first time I looked at it and went, you know what? End to end, we did well there.
I think two things from me. First one is that, unfortunately, I know quite a lot of Brighton fans living where we do, and they have all said the same thing as you there, which is that that was the best performance they've seen. So I'm, you know, I'm pleased for you in that
respect. I can see that in your face. Yeah.
And I think, secondly, my take on it was tactically, your big man got it right. Specifically finding Nottingham Forest's Achilles heel, which I think was on the left side. So your choice of winger there, I think, was a tactical masterclass, but I'm sure you're going to tell us all about that.
Well, absolutely. I'm more than happy to, Andy. More than blimmin' happy to. So let's talk about lineups first. There was a few little changes, a few little things that we needed to look at. So there was only actually one change to the lineup from the last few weeks, and that was Carlos Baleba dropped.
Do you know what? You should have done that weeks ago.
Of course we should have. Of course we should have. But he got there in the end, and yes, he was dropped to the bench. Now, what that meant was Diego Gomez came in from that left wing position into midfield alongside Ayari. And although I'm not a big lover of Gomez in that position, I understand why he did it. Inglewood isn't yet 100% back to match fitness, so I think they're trying to get his minutes up bit by bit. So yeah, he was back in midfield, and that meant that De Kuyper came back in. Now, when you saw the lineup, and I think Sky, Premier League even, they all looked at it and went, oh, okay, so it's going to be De Kuyper back at left back where he normally plays, and Ferdi Kadioglu on the left in front of him, which is what we've seen in bits before. And I think if you remember back when they played Leeds and we beat them 3-0, they played in that position. And I said, oh, it's so great to see the two of them on that side. They sort of dovetail really nicely. Well, that's what happened on Sunday, only this time he played De Kuyper as the winger. And I think you're right, Andy. I think that was the game-changing sort of idea that came out of it. Savona, the right-back, and Sangare, the midfield, on the sort of the right-hand side as well. And even to some point, Ndoye, who was playing on the right wing for Forest. Ndoye isn't great going backwards. He's not a great defender. He doesn't want to come back. And Savona was okay, but again, he's not overly mobile, in my opinion. So there was definitely a hole there that they looked at. So we started the game, and I have to say, the first 20 minutes of that game, I can't believe how many chances Brighton created. There must have been, and this is like quality of chances, there must have been four in the first 9 minutes that were, could have been goals. Like literally, like the first 40 seconds, Minte over the top should have controlled the ball. He was there on the keeper. There was a cross from De Kuyper, one of the first ones of the day, that were inches away from Gomez's foot slicing. There was a second cross late, about 15 minutes into the game, where Rutter sort of scored, or at least got a shot on target. You know, there were so many chances in that first 20 minutes. Like you, Andy, with the Man United game, I was sitting there thinking, how have we not scored? And oh my God, is it going to be one of those days where we just don't take advantage? It was crazy. Cheer up, Andy. It's all right. We got to like 25 minutes, right? And we had played some really good football. They hadn't created anything. And I was feeling confident to the point of thinking, okay, I don't think we're going to lose this game. But at the same time, I've seen this movie before. Maybe we're going to get done on the counter or something like that.
They were tired though, right? Because they just played on Thursday.
I looked at the lineup and there were a number of changes.
Were there?
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. They definitely were like hungover, I think is probably a good way to look at it, when the way they started. they tweaked their tactics about 25 minutes into the game, and that slowed us down. And I think Lewis Dunk even spoke about it in the press conference afterwards. He said that they changed the way they were defending, and they went man for man. So the press that they were trying to give Albion was more difficult for Albion to get out of. So it slowed them down. They had to work out another way. And I think that next sort of 25 minutes of the first half was a lot more even. And I think apart from maybe one opportunity, though, for Morgan Gibbs-White, where he got the ball across and he tried to volley it in the bottom corner, that was the one chance for Nottingham Forest for the whole half. Otherwise, I felt like it was pretty much just all Albion for the whole first half, and yet we haven't scored. And you know, it's that feeling of like, oh no, what's going to happen, you know? And so I was getting a bit stressed that we hadn't taken our chances. But literally, as it ticked over to half time, in the injury time, we finally found our breakthrough. And it was again, we had a free kick and Nottingham Forest kicked it out. Verbruggen, by this time, had got all the way up to the halfway line, picked up the ball, long cross over to Minte on the right, brought it down really sweetly, passes it into Jorginho, who again finds a little hole, passes it behind Welbeck as the dummy run, and in middle of the penalty box with loads of space is De Kuyper, our new left winger, who just turns up and lovely finish into the bottom corner. And we're 1-0 up. Yeah, and it was like, finally, you know, literally it was about 30 seconds before the end of the first half. So we go in 1-0 up, and it was just a really good half. And you were thinking to yourself, look, I hope one goal's enough. You know, I hope we get another one. But to not be 3 or 4 up at that point felt a little disappointing. But at the same time, you felt great because they played so well. Half time came, as I said, and there was obviously going to be a change for Forest. They had to do something because it was just, they were so out of sorts, I would say, in the first half. And they did make changes. And I think this is my point about Brighton playing a full 90 minutes and having to do different things throughout the game to survive as such. And so the second half did change. Hudson-Odoi and Hutchinson both came on. So fresh wingers, as it were, came on for...
Two starters.
Yeah. No, Hudson-Odoi hasn't been starting, but yeah, Hutchinson has. It's very much a squad game now, Andy, so yeah, I don't think we should be talking about starters or, you know, it's finishers and starters, I think they call them.
So basically, Forest started taking you seriously after 1-0 down.
And Forest did, to be fair, take a bit of control then. You know, they had to, really. They had
there
to apply
pressure.
There was a
period, wasn't there? Was it about 10 minutes or so where kind of, I think they did take control of that game.
Yeah,
but that
yeah.
was it, though. That was it.
No, I agree. I think, yeah, first sort of 15 minutes maybe of the second half, they obviously went for it and tried to get a go. And I think, again, you're making changes. It changes the players on the Albion side thinking, okay, let me just double check how I'm going to do this or how are we going to do it. So I think there was a change. But at the same time, I would say Albion looked really solid, really, over the whole time. I mean, they were full of energy. Lots of selfless running as well in between, making the runs that they know they're not going to get the ball, but it creates space for someone else. In particular, Ferdi Kadioglu, the amount of runs he makes off the ball to create the space is amazing to watch. I don't know where he gets his fitness from. The changes for Forest, as I said, did sort of make Albion sit back a little bit and just sort of look to maybe counterattack. So they changed their style and they waited. And it was, it was a real shame, obviously. We weren't 3-0 up at that point, but I think it was sitting back on purpose to try and sort of maybe conserve our energy a little bit and then sort of counterattack. And the pressure from Forest, I would say, although it was quite a lot of pressure, there wasn't really loads of opportunity still, golden opportunities. I mean, Verbruggen made, I think, 3 saves through the whole game. And realistically, only one of them was a really big opportunity, I would say. So it wasn't until maybe the 80th minute where he made what was probably the save of the game from Savona, and with his feet, it was like a low shot and he just got it away from it. So at that point, you get to sort of like 80 minutes and you're thinking, blimey, that's the first proper opportunity that Verbruggen's had to save. So from that point of view, we'd managed the game pretty well. Actually, at this point, I probably should also mention a few things that happened from our starting 11 and the subs inside of things as well. Okay. Because,
sorry, I am still here. I was just sitting back listening to it's hard, isn't it? It's hard listening to someone doing well.
Oh, it's my turn. Hinchelwood, right? So he comes on around 56 minutes.
Okay.
Now, he comes on because Jorginho Rutter goes down with a head injury.
Oh, is he all right?
He goes down with a head. It wasn't that bad. I mean, it was a bit... I can't remember exactly what it was. It was Hudson-Odoi. That was it. He basically went to cross the ball and it went straight in Rutter's face from about a yard. So it's going to hurt, obviously.
Yeah.
Rutter goes down. So they bring everybody on and obviously start doing the normal concussion checks and all that sort of stuff. And he's fine-ish. Like, he gets up. He's getting up a little bit slowly.
Does that mean he's got a lead? He's got a...
So...
Oh, go on.
I know what your question is. Does that mean he misses the next game? So concussion protocol means that, yeah, if he is concussed, he has to have at least 5 days, I think it is the window. So that would mean midweek he misses, possibly he will miss the next game for West Ham as well at home next weekend, but we'd have to see. So he goes off, but what Brighton did at that point is they didn't nominate a concussion substitute, which is the option they can have to extend the number of substitutions they can make. Instead, they said no, normal substitution. And to be fair to Georgina Rutter, when he went off, I don't think he realised for a split second he was being subbed off.
That's because he had concussion.
and he was walking diagonally. Do you know what I mean? Like, so they walked him off, and obviously then they started walking him towards the tunnel, and he's like, "What? What are we doing? Why am I going down here?" And then he looks back and he can see Jack Inchelwood going on for him, and he's like, no, I'm fine, sort of thing. You know, they take him down the tunnel. He's back in on the bench within 5 minutes and stuff.
Right.
And Fabian Herza after the game did say that they're very sure that it's not concussion, but they just didn't want to take a chance. But having seen him and the doctors have seen him afterwards, he's fine, sort of thing. And I think he's
still
that.
Trying to find himself in the tunnel. Just got this image. Where's everyone gone?
I was like, why am I going down here? It was very funny to watch in some respects, but I wish you well, Jorginho. Hinchwood comes on, and again, Hinchwood coming on means Gomez, who's a little bit unpredictable, goes back into the 10, and Hinchwood in that midfield, I think, makes such a difference. You know, he's such a calm player and knits everything together. So that was really good to see him back.
Well, he did all right when he came on the previous game, didn't he?
Exactly. And I think that's the nice thing, that Hinchwood, you know, 56 minutes he came on, so he had a good 40 minutes under his belt now. So he should be close to starting soon. Simas came on for Welbeck probably earlier than most of us expected as well. He came on at 65 minutes, but again, it might be because we know we've got a game in midweek. So that might be something, the reason why that happened. And he was a live wire. And I think, again, that probably helped our counter-attacking style in the second half, because he's quicker than Welbeck for obvious reasons. And then the other things that I probably wanted to mention were Blaber, Gruder and Veltman all came on with 10 minutes to go. And that was really trying to shore up that defence and make sure that, obviously, Belaba coming on as a sub is a really good sub to have in some respects. You know he's got power, you know he's got strength, and hopefully his concentration can last 15 minutes. That was the plan. So he did pretty well when he came on, to be fair to him.
I think mentally, him not starting and being subbed and him sitting on the bench and coming on, that's more of a positive thing.
I think so.
Do you get what I'm saying? As opposed to starting and being subbed off again and it's like, what have I done?
I think so. And I think it also helps, because I do feel a lot of this is to do with the mental side of the game. And I think it helps him compartmentalise sort of his approach. He can literally wait until he's due to come on. The coach can give him a one-on-one and say, this is what I want you to do for the next 15 minutes, you know. And I think he did come on. He looked assured. It was fine. You know, it wasn't a big moment for him. He didn't have too much to do, but it was just nice to see him back on the pitch. Forest, obviously, in the last sort of 15 minutes, start to get a bit more desperate. And as I said, that Verbruggen save on the 80th minute was the first real proper save he's had to make. But then they put more pressure on, and there are a few melees in the box, but not really resulting in loads of shots on target or anything. And there was one particular moment about 87, 88 minutes where they have an opportunity to shoot and they sky it over the bar. And
it did feel a little bit like you were holding on at that moment.
I agree.
I'm not saying that it felt inevitable they were going to score. But it did feel a little bit squeaky bum.
I think I know what you mean. We were 1-0. It's 1-0 is dangerous, isn't it? You know, you never know what's going to happen. And I can't rely on Brighton being consistent, because they never are. So this was the first game, though, I would say, where I wasn't overly worried. Like, it just felt like we were holding them. The defensive structure was working quite well, albeit only one goal. So as I say, that kick goes over the bar. Verbruggen picks it up, takes the goal kick, and this time he goes long. And this is where our second goal comes into it. Now, it was 88 minutes. We, you know, that's the point where we finally put the game to bed. And I think what I would say about it is Forest are obviously trying to push forward. They've only really, because we kick it long, there's only the two central defenders at the back. And they just make an absolute mess of it, really. I mean, I don't know if you saw it, Andy, but Morato sort of goes to head the ball, then it bounces. Gruder chases after it with him. Keeper comes out at the same time near the edge of the box. And there's just a whole, blimey. I don't know if you saw Gruder. He looked like he'd been shot by a sniper in the crowd and he didn't get touched.
Really?
Honestly, awful dive. Please, Gruder, stop doing that.
Oh, no, I did see this.
Terrible.
Dirty Brighton again.
I get it. I know the whole, look, it's the last minute of the game. Let's see if we can get a penalty. But that was so bad. He should have got booked. The funniest thing of the lot, though, was the fact that when that sort of collision between the three of them happened, Gruder dives on the floor, looks like he's been shot, as I say, and Morato sort of touches the ball and goes to sort of almost turn round with the ball. And because he does that, there's this little hole between him and the goalkeeper and the ball is just ripe, just sitting there. Toe poke of the season so far. Simas just toe pokes it, goes straight in the back of the net. And Gruder, who looked like he was dying for half a second, suddenly jumped up and starts running over Simas. It was like hilarious, really was. And I don't condone diving and I hate it when my players do it. So please don't do it, Brajan. I really don't want to see it. But 2-0 up, 88 minutes. Cue away scenes in the away end, everyone going mental. And I'm not going to go over the game too much more than that. The bottom line is really good away performance. We were hard working. We had improved decision making throughout the game, I would say as well. Now, there's still room for improvement, but throughout the team, and I think this comes from continuity, players started to understand what was asked of them and where their colleagues would be at certain moments in time. And it looked so much more cohesive. And the left side, look, I've got to talk about it. Tekuipa and Kadioglu is so fun to watch, Andy. Honestly, they work so well together. One will go, one will stay. There's two different options constantly because one's right-footed, one's left-footed. Tekuipa's crossing. His ability to cross that ball into that sort of corridor of uncertainty was just fantastic to see. And although maybe I'm still not quite comfortable in the centre of midfield seeing those two play, Gomez and Ayari, I am kind of hoping Hinshelwood will help that at some point. I really can't complain about a 2-0 away win. That's just fantastic.
Yeah, do you think that's do you think it's going to be stick or twist with the formation and the starting lineup now? Do you think that's now do you think that was a tweak for Forest, or do you think that's something that's going to kick in going forward?
I think that's a tweak for Forrest. But having said that, for Hörsler, usually if something works, he will stick with it.
Mm.
The only problem we've got is that we've got a midweek game, which inherently means we probably will make changes because we've then got another game on Saturday. And generally speaking, for most managers, they will want to make a few little changes to keep certain players fresh. Having said that...
I don't know what that's like.
Having said that, the game on Wednesday is against Villa, who are one place ahead of us. The game on Saturday is against West Ham. So if ever you were going to make changes, you probably wait for the West Ham game. So we'll have to wait and see. But as I say,
You can't beat Villa. That would be awful.
Andy, well, I can't imagine we will, but if we do, that would be the best result of the season if we beat Villa in the form that Villa are currently in. Look, we're moving ahead. Don't want to talk about that. Let me just say, last few points, right? So obviously that means that Brighton are now currently in fifth position. Now it sounds fantastic and I'm really happy because it means we're 3 points away from second.
But we're also
3 points away from 10th.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that and that's why I've said it.
No, but it's true.
It's ridiculous.
And this is the point, right? And this is exactly what we said, which is that if you win a game, you're fighting for Champions League places.
Yep.
If you lose a game, you could be down in the bottom half.
And this is why
I think it's going to be the most exciting run-in to any season ever.
I think we'll have to wait until we get to around end of January. That's when the things usually even themselves out and you get to that point. Once you've got past Christmas, there's a winter break and all that sort of thing, AFCON, all those things. Once you get to the end of January, I think hopefully you'll start seeing the league sort of fan out a little bit and there'll be a bit more space.
The bigger squad's starting to do it.
I agree. Yeah, exactly. So, 3 points away from second, but 3 points away from 10th.
Mad.
And it just highlights how close that league table is. One last point, by the way. We have had, if you look at November as a whole, a fantastic month. Last month, the month before that, so September and October, right? We won one, drew one, lost one in both of those months.
Okay.
In November, as a whole, we've played four games. We've won three, we've drawn one. We've conceded one goal. We've got two clean sheets. Like, that is a really good month. And that was the consistency that we've been asking for. And if you think about the number of changes that Herz has made to the team, you would say the last four games, we've only seen a couple of changes. He's really started to firm up who he's expecting to see in that lineup now. So I'm hopeful that that can continue.
I'm really pleased for you.
I can see that, Andy. I can see that. But it's
been fair play, mate. It was a good look. It's a good win. And I think I look back at our Seagull from Spain. Mm. I don't know if you remember, he made a prediction to say, could be fighting for the top six, which I laughed in his face.
I laughed at Gary all the time, but in particular for that one, yeah.
And Gary's the one laughing right now. Whether that would be the case later on in the year, we shall wait and see. But one thing you do have that a lot of the teams around you don't is that you've got no European football and you've also got a nice big squad.
I totally agree.
So you never know, but I hope that it won't have a beneficial effect, but let's see. What I do know is that return Seagull-Eagle fixture is going to be juicy because it could mean quite a lot.
Yes, yeah. By that time, the gap might be huge, Andy. You never know. It might be just a waste of time.
Oh, no, you're not going to slip back down again, mate.
You'll have four players on the pitch or something.
Yeah.
No manager, he'll be at Anfield. I mean, it could all happen by then.
Be the kit man in goal.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Seagull Eagle. And although we have now spoke about the Premier League games, I think we probably need to go back in time a little bit further to the UEFA Conference League and your trip to Strasbourg. Now, I'm having a little bit of a problem remembering how that game went. So I was wondering if you could remind me of what the score was on that one, Andy.
I know, I can understand that you don't know much about the Conference League or Europe as a whole. So I'll remind you. We lost 2-1 on that one. But better to be in it than not.
You're almost out of it.
Not yet, we're not, mate. No way.
No, go on. No Talk to way. Me about that game. Because in all fairness, it was a crazy game. I did watch it. I had to watch it because I really like Strasbourg. I like the way they play. They're exciting to watch. So I did wonder how the game would play out. As we spoke about last week, we were, you know, wondering how it would end up. I said it would be quite a tight game and, you know, exciting. And I think you predicted, what did you predict, Andy?
I can't even remember. I think I predicted 2-1.
I think you did. Yeah. So, go on then. Come on.
I'm really struggling not to throw this table at you right now. I'm not going to lie. Right, lineups. Palace made three changes from the Wolves game. Canvo, Lerma and Hughes started in the place of Richards, Wharton and Kamada. So I think it's the first time that Canvo and Gaye have played together, which was interesting.
Okay.
So this was the battle of fifth place at the time. Fifth place in Ligue 1 and fifth place in the Premier League. It's amazing how quickly you can move up and down, isn't it? So again, the Palace needs to win to keep us in the pack for the auto qualification. So obviously it's that first eight, isn't it, qualify,
that's
and
right.
Then you've got to get into the second bit to get into the playoffs and so on. Really, first half, we started strong. First chance came from Mateta, tries to lob the keeper, didn't quite manage to catch him out. Another chance for Mateta. Great cross by Hughes over the crossbar. Same old story, all of this, isn't it? Lerma miscued. Hughesy got injured, but has also made a miraculous recovery and obviously since played in the game against Man United. Mm. But he had to be replaced by Wharton. And I do believe that that kind of scuppered our planning of that game. Right. That was a change that we hadn't planned to make.
Yeah, I get you.
But obviously Wharton came on, who ended up getting involved in that first goal, hitting a long ball through to Mateta, played a really clever pass behind the defence. It was lovely to see, actually. And then Mitchell kind of shot it into the bottom corner. His second goal of the season, a nicely worked goal, and I think well-deserved. I think we deserve to be in the lead. And I
totally agree with you. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about so many obviously things that happened through this game, but I think it was very clear that you were the stronger side, really, through most of the game.
Yeah, I think we were in control at that point and after, and lots of chances coming our way. I think my major regret out of all of this game was Penders, the keeper, right? I feel like he... I don't know how to describe it. Like a bloke running around with a fistful of money going, do you want some? Do you want some? And then just not quite being able to catch him. So I don't know whether that's the worst analogy ever, but do you know what I mean? As in he basically thought he was a defensive midfielder throughout the whole game.
That's tactics, mate.
I know it is.
That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to basically get you to come onto them. So by having a goalkeeper that looks like he's playing centre-back, I mean, it was exciting to watch. I mean, from an outsider's point of view, I don't know how the Strasbourg fans don't have heart problems watching it every week. It was crazy.
Well, I just think that if they'd have got us not on an off day, we would have made them pay for that tactical decision. But that's the bit that wound me up a little bit, because I was like, we're known for picking up that ball. We're known for all of that. And it just didn't, it just didn't click. And the only way where it didn't click was that final ball into the back of the net.
Yep.
But anyway, we did score a goal out of open play, as I said earlier, from a defence, which is not normally where they come from. Penders the keeper. He was put under pressure. Saar picked up the loose ball and he missed a completely open goal, Neil.
This is getting familiar, this, isn't it?
In Saar's defence.
Oh, hello.
He did hit it to the middle of the goal and it curled. Remarkably, I mean, you looked at it from when he hit it and you looked at it from that front on angle, you know, when everyone's gone, missed an open goal.
Yeah.
Well, he did hit it in the middle. It just curled out.
Yeah. I mean, he should have scored, mate.
This is one of the 15 that we should have scored this week.
Yeah. Horrendous.
But there you go. And then I think that was the first half where you go in and you go 1-0 up. Brilliant. Going to regret that.
The thing is, right, so at the end of the first half, I looked at that and thought, blimey, you know, they've missed some sitter there. And obviously, they're still 1-0 up, though. This could be like 3 or 4 to Palace. I honestly still didn't think Strasbourg, although they were insane to watch, at that point, I didn't think Strasbourg were going to get back into it. It just looked like you had the ultimate chances all the time in that first half. So I thought, there'll be more coming along.
Do you know what? Truthfully, I thought the same.
Yeah.
I was sat there watching it and I was like, oh, maybe we will win this competition.
Yeah.
This is looking good. And also there was like Amenga and a few of the other players were showing like signs of brilliance. Mm. Like, and I had my son whisper in my ear going, he's well good on FIFA. like, do you get what I mean? And you're kind of like, oh, hang on, there's some names here.
Yeah.
They can cause us damage. They just need to sort their stuff out a little bit. Anyway, second half, Chris Richards started in for Gay, so he made a change there, which was an interesting one.
Do we know why? Was that just tactical, saving legs maybe?
I think maybe Glasner's decided that he's going to start resting some players.
Yeah.
I wish he hadn't. Look, Richards did brilliantly when he came in, but also I don't think we needed to. Gay's one of the main men, right? So I don't know, let's see. 8 minutes after the break though, Amenga volleyed a ball past Henderson to level. And I think that was when it was like, okay, you give them the ball, they're going to do some damage with it.
It was a great passing move. It really was.
I mean, I didn't see much of it because my head was in my hands for the replay.
No, I saw that goal and I was clapping, not just because it was against Palace. It was just a really good goal. And they are such a good team to watch.
And they are. It's exciting football. And so they were back in the game. And then obviously they looked like they meant business at this point, right? But also, I thought that they were quite vulnerable in the pressing midfield. We were causing them problems, right? And then obviously Walton nicked the ball and hit the crossbar minutes later. I tell you, I mean, just even this week, if you count how many times we've hit the woodwork, this is the ironic thing about all of this, which is why I'm so annoyed. I think I would be less annoyed about this whole situation if we'd have played so badly in these two games and just lost
them. Yeah, you could almost give it and go, oh, well, we were just terrible. You weren't. You were pretty good and just couldn't score.
Anyway, Glasner bought on Nketiah for Mateta after 60 minutes, who pretty much immediately worked with Munez to skillfully set up Pino. But for him to go and, what did he do? Hit the near post. And the keeper then saved the rebound bit. Then at the other end, Strasbourg picked up a free kick in a good area. And Ciso, good old Ciso.
So close. Mate, I thought he was going to do it for us.
Well, he hit the crossbar. And then what happened? All the Palace players went, oh, it didn't go in, or it didn't go by. Oh, it did.
It was a great free kick. I was so pleased for Nciso. I thought it was going in, and for him to do that against Palace, it was like a last little leaving present for Brighton fans, but it still ended up in a goal, so I was very happy.
Yeah, and of course, the guy that was El Morabet, he got his first senior goal.
His first?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Typical, isn't it? More end-to-end play at that point then, right? Henderson made a good save from a free kick. Pino missed the target the other end.
Yeah.
For me, the final moments of this game were, as a Palace fan, unwatchable.
It was very interesting, actually, because... Well, actually, no, you say why you think it was frustrating first before I jump across. Why was it so frustrating for you?
Ben Chilwell finally found his form.
Yeah.
The clock was ticking down. We were very unlike us, right? Which is that chances were flying in for the whole game.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we go down and we can't create a single chance in that last 4 minutes. And they were doing what the teams should be doing, when you're trying to frustrate a team when you're winning, which is running it into the corner flag and doing all the other bits and pieces. And it just felt like, you know, like it's that whole, I don't know how to describe it, it's that whole kind of like the feeling of invincibility, which I've kind of, it's grown on me, where you start believing the hype.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you realise that you're not invincible because we are losing and it's not going to be okay. That's why I couldn't watch it.
I get it. I was, because what I was going to say was, what was interesting about that sort of last maybe 10 minutes or so was once Strasbourg's got in front, it was like they just decided that was it. That then they changed their style. Like they just stopped messing about. You know what I mean? It was like
100%.
They got to like 80 minutes and went, right, now we're going to play plan B. And plan B is we turn into prime Aston Villa. We're going to time waste. We're going to go down. We're going to stop any opportunity
for fouls.
Yeah,
and they did. And like there was fouls that we were making on them that we weren't planning to make, but they were making us do it. It's just,
again,
just all of it.
Just tactically, I thought Strasbourg were excellent. You know, of course they... The way they play is they give you chances, and you had the chances. Let's be honest, you should have put them away. You should have been five up probably in that game. You should have scored five goals.
Well, let's look at that, Neil.
Go on.
Two open goals in one game.
Yes.
16 shots. How many touches in the opposition box?
God knows.
40.
40?
Neil, 40. Right. Let me just say that again. Two open goals, 16 shots, 40 touches in the opposition box. And yes, Palace fans, this is a game we did not win.
Yeah.
And it was another game of putting all the hard work in and getting absolutely sod all out. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And it was the end of our five match unbeaten run at that point, which is now turned into a two match losing run. I'll be honest with you, mate. I think probably the best way to describe this, and the Palace fans who watch both games will understand this, is it was pretty much a bloody carbon copy of the Larnaca game.
Yes.
Just with better opposition. Which was that we were the dominant side, creating chances.
But you probably had clearer chances this game.
We just couldn't convert. Yeah, yeah. And do you know what? The truth is, again, same what I said about the Larnaca game. If we replayed that game out, it would have had a completely different outcome, because just by the flick of a coin, however the wind blew, whatever it would be, one of them would have gone in. Do you know what I mean?
Ultimately, the reason these same players for Palace, who have been playing really well, are now starting not to play very well, it's because they're tired, Andy.
Yeah, I guess, mate, I get it. They are tired. You ain't going to get me with that one again, Neil. We're not going to go around in circles. But also what I would say is if a professional footballer earning all that money shouldn't be playing two games a week, then they shouldn't be a professional footballer. Because if you're going to play for any of the big teams that all these players want to play for, then they'll be doing that anyway. So I think, yes,
no, they'll have
don't...
bigger squads, Andy.
They won't be playing two games.
They won't be playing every single. Your players have had it tough. They really have.
They have.
I mean this fairly, right? Your players have been run into the ground because you haven't used your squad, or we haven't got a bigger squad. You know,
well, we've got the lowest rotation, and they've played the most amount of minutes.
And it's really starting to pay off now for other fans of other teams, because you can start to see that problem. And I think the Strasbourg game, coming up against a team that is so energetic, so high press, so much one touch passing, you have to run around a lot to beat Strasbourg. And I think although they didn't take their chances, they had their chances, I think they just started to look tired. And I think the knock on effect of that was what we saw Sunday with Man United game.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, the same thing happened, right? It was the end of the game. But look, I don't think this is the first time we're going to meet Strasbourg this year.
No, I agree with you. I agree.
And I think that, yes, it's annoying, but it's not embarrassing. It was embarrassing to lose to Larnaca, but Strasbourg are going... If you have a look at that table, mate, Strasbourg are going to be there right at the very end in that competition.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I was just actually looking at the table, right, at the Conference League table, that is, and I'm looking at names of teams, right? Yeah. And I don't mean this in any disrespect to any of the teams in there, but we've spoke about it. Yeah. You know my position, that Palace should be... absolutely getting to the final. Whether they win it is another matter, but they should definitely be getting to the final. And when you look at the size of teams and the other teams in it, there are a few absolutely that you could call out, and those teams are AZ Alkmaar, obviously. Fiorentina are always there or thereabouts,
but they're not doing brilliantly, are they?
They're not, but they're a good side, generally speaking. You've got AEK Athens, again another good side, but then really you've got Mainz, the German side, who you played at pre-season, didn't you?
Yeah, and lost to.
Yep. And then you've got Strasbourg, and the other teams, Shakhtar Donetsk is the other big one, I would say, as well. But apart from that, so there's like maybe six teams, you know. And so when you look at that, you know, you fully expect Palace to easily make the top eight, did you say? I think is the first round sort of
go-through.
You've
got to get to the top eight, mate. But I think the thing is that two or three of them teams you just mentioned are in our group.
Right.
And I think, the AZ are in it. So I don't think we've had the easiest run of this. But obviously, we didn't help ourselves by losing to Larnaca. Yeah. I think the Strasbourg game would be the one you go, you can afford to lose that one. Want to still get in the top eight. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that we lost to Larnaca is a problem. Now we've got two games. We've got AZ, and we've also got Shelbourne, and they're very winnable games. Which we must, obviously, the AZ one's at home the week after next. I am convinced that we're still going to be okay.
Oh yeah, so am I.
I think that it's all more exciting to try and win it the hard way now. So we're sat in 18th, must win. And do you know what? Let's go back and smash them.
Yeah.
And I think there is a really strong chance that we will meet them again.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, the one thing you don't want to do in this competition is come and finish outside of the eighth position, so that you have an extra game, at least like a playoff game. That's the least of your problems,
Neil,
but I know it's not
going
to help.
That is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I promise you now. That is what we're going to do. We'll create ourselves another situation where we've got, you know, seven games in 7 days to play, and we'll make it even harder for ourselves and probably lose a couple more people due to injury playing Azerbaijan.
A man can only dream, Andy.
Honestly, I look, listen, this is Palace, Neil. We do nothing the easy way. The main thing is that we lost a game that was technically losable. It would have been easier if we'd have won it, but we're not out of the competition. Anyway, thank you for listening to another episode of Seagull Eagle podcast. We really thank you for the two people that have listened.
Make sure, you two, to follow the show so you don't miss an episode when it comes out. And we'll be back next week to obviously talk about games against Villa and West Ham for Brighton and Burnley and Fulham for Palace.
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, X, and search for Seagull Eagle to get the conversation started.
You could drop us an email if you would like to, seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
And we'll see you next week. Until then,
Eagles!
Seagulls!
What an awful podcast, though.
They were terrible, weren't they?